Is there any night you don't have a takeaway?
And I had one tonight.
That's a shock. Because I was on the phone to you the other day and you were ordering a KFC. Then you've just told us you had Indian last night. I take it because you were away at the weekend. You ate out Friday night. What did you have Saturday night?
We actually had an Indian. I had an Indian Saturday and Sunday. I fancied one. What are you going to do? Sue
what
me,
did bro. You have Friday?
Friday. Oh, we just went to the pub. I had like something relative. No, it wasn't healthy at all, actually. It was steak and ale pie with vegetables and mash.
For the tightest person I know, you eat a hell of a lot. You eat out a hell of a lot.
Yeah, but it was going to be fish fingers. No, I didn't have. Yeah, I did have an Indian last night. It was going to be fish fingers last night when I got home. Fish finger sandwiches, because that's what Kay was going to do. And I was like, oh, I don't fancy fish finger sandwiches. And I thought, if I said, should we have a takeaway? She'd have gone, nah. And so I thought, well, I've been away all weekend. I'll go, should we have a takeaway? My treat. And that worked a treat. And she went, go on then.
So you don't have a shared account, so you can kind of buy whatever you want. She didn't even know.
No. Like, this, it's not that intrusive, I don't think, but, like, everybody used to think it was weird. When I work with people and I tell them, like, how finances, we sort the finances out. Like, let the listeners decide if this is weird. We have, like, her income and my income. We work out the percentage of how much that is. So, one might earn 55%, one might earn 45% of the household income. And then that person who earns 55% pays 55% of the bills. The other person pays 45% of the bills. And then whatever's left is your own. But everybody finds that bizarre that we don't just put it all into a joint account and like take everything from there. But I wouldn't want to do that because I feel like if I spend some of it, then I've got to justify it. Whereas this way, it's my money. I can do what I want with it.
Yeah.
I think joint accounts are old-fashioned these days, aren't they?
I don't know. What do you do, Josh? Something similar or joint account?
We have a joint account, but, I mean, we're pretty relaxed on that side of things. Like, we could probably save ourselves a lot of money if we just, like, even looked at the account every once in a while. But speaking of takeaways, we're like the takeaway kings.
You live in London though, don't you?
Well, that and just having a newborn for the first time, you know, it's just like, can't be asked sometimes to cook. And you're just
what's his favourite takeaway?
He likes just...
Milk Express.
Yeah, Milk Express. That's what I was going to say. I mean, there's a few milk choices, but he always goes for the same one.
Can you sort me out some of that? Because I'm having trouble with my supply at the moment.
Luxury milk. Luxury milk.
I'll speak to Blair. I'm pretty sure she's gonna just look at me and not say anything. But
are you asking for it directly from the source, Bone?
No.
That's all we do in this house. Okay.
We're getting worse.
If I wake up and have a bowl of cereal. Never mind.
What's that luxury milk quote from Duffy? I've heard that before.
From the Peep Show.
Oh, it's from Peep Show. Yeah. Oh, it's...
And he goes, luxury milk.
What a show. What have you been up to, Josh? Or is this the wrong segment for that?
Oh, he's taking over again. He's trying to dominate the show. We're not doing that this time.
Yeah.
We're not doing it.
Well, he didn't know, but he's supposed to say, should we start the show?
Well, you just did, Josh.
Before we do that, because I don't really want to go into it on the show, but we had a lot of people actually complimenting our in-depth conspiracy talks over the weekend. It was brought up, I reckon, about four or five times.
By different people.
Yeah, and they did give us some other examples.
Oh, I like this. Let's discuss.
I can't remember what they are due to.
One of those people be
and other stuff.
The Condor.
No, he wasn't there.
Damn it.
No, he wasn't there.
Anyway.
I can't remember what they were. I'll see if I can remember.
What, in the next 30 seconds?
Good ones. But
once we started the show.
For future shows. But the one that people did like was the birds aren't real one.
It's not a conspiracy.
But it was brought up. Somebody said, what about owls? And then it made me think. I was laying in bed on Friday night after I was at this, and I thought, right, so with owls, okay,
they can swivel so far.
They're trying to like rubbish the conspiracy theory or the theory. I'm not even going to say it's a conspiracy theory because at this point it is a theory. they're trying to rubbish it using a bird that can literally turn its head like 180 degrees.
Does that
not say it's a robot? Well, this is the thing. So at night they have different cameras, obviously night vision cameras, to be able to see.
Yeah.
So they can't afford as many of them because it's obviously higher cost, isn't it, for night vision? So they have an animal or a bird, electronic bird, shall we say, that is enabled to twist its head so it can look in different directions. So they don't have to keep making loads of them because they can't afford the night vision in
them. Are we calling them birds still, or should we call them drones?
Don't know. But I'll see if I can remember what the other one was for next week, and we'll go from there. So, right. On that note, we'll start the show.
Well, it's time for In the Chains, the UK-based podcast for amateur disc golfers. Get ready for course reviews, disc reviews, and the latest news and updates from the disc golf world. Your hosts will also talk about their own progression and have a lot of fun along the way. And now, here they are, two Brits and one Yang. Let's get started.
Welcome back, everybody, to a brand new episode of In the Chains. And on the tee box tonight with me, as always, we have Joshua Birmingham. And the Brummie from Licky End, Thomas Bowen.
You're not getting a bite. You know I'm not from Licky End.
By order of the Grimpeaky Blinders.
Oh my God. There's a subculture of people in Birmingham. I don't know if you lads have this.
Yeah, I've said it. Whenever you go to the races or the dogs or something.
And they're all
pathetic.
Peaky Blinders. They all look like Peaky Blinders.
They all dress like it. And they think they're in it. I swear they think they're in the cast of the Peaky Blinders.
Does their haircut kind of look like this? A little shorter on the sides,
no,
I guess.
No, a bit shorter on the side. Yeah. But they all wear flat caps. They all wear those thick coats. I don't know what they're like. Herringbone coats, is that right? Like, you know, they're really thick overcoats.
I'm sure Sammy would tell us, because he knows what creepers are. So I'm sure Sammy would be able to tell us.
With, like, I don't know, suspenders or something. Like, just dress smartly with a flat cap on, and they think they're, like... They just think they're, like, Tommy... What's his name?
Tommy Shelby. Speaking of that show, my father-in-law calls it Pinky Blinders.
Pinky Blinders?
It cracks me up.
Is that just because he gets it wrong every time, or is there another meaning to it?
No, he just doesn't know, and I'm not going to correct him, because I think it's great.
Tell him you know somebody from Birmingham, and he married into the Shelby family.
He listened to the show, and he enjoys it.
But the Birmingham accent, mine's not the broadest, although Duffy will tell you it is.
It's nowhere near the broadest.
But you think I sound like a Brummie, don't you?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you are.
Yeah, but I my parents are from Kent anyway. I'm going off topic, but the Peaky Blinders, the actors for the first couple of series didn't sound like Brummies.
No, they're terrible.
Secondly, a lot of the scenes were filmed in Liverpool.
Yeah.
So that winds me up.
Some of it was actually filmed on Licky Hills, though, wasn't it? By you in Licky End.
I'm not in Licky End. You know that. You didn't know that.
Anyways,
you're just trying to get a bite, aren't you?
So, what we went up to, Joshua? I'll go to you first.
You guys had a more exciting weekend, it sounds like. But
oh, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. You didn't go. All right. Well, anyway, I actually spent time with your teammates, Sammy and John.
Oh, yeah.
In Croydon, building tee pads again. So that was good. We've gotten two-thirds of the course
Sammy
done.
Sammy contributed to it.
No.
He did.
He stood around looking pretty, 100%.
No. Promise. I saw him with a spade in his hand digging and moving sand and all kinds of stuff.
Was he holding it for John?
Look, I don't want to start a riff in the relationship, but I think Sammy might have done more work than John.
Oh, really?
Interesting. It could have been
at the point when I walked up, John was just taking a well-deserved break, but who knows? Who knows?
Interesting.
I mean, yeah.
Those tee pads look pretty sick, man. I think they look really, really good.
Well, we've gotten better at it, like, over the course of the last year or so, because we've been doing about three every time we go out for the weekend, and this last batch, they're a meter longer, so you can actually start your run-up on the tee pad. You don't have to, like, do a step up to anything. So it's amazing.
Are they building the frame at home?
No, we do it on site. So,
oh, okay.
Kind of the reason for extending it is because a few people complained that they were too short to begin with.
You did, didn't you?
It's all no. Well, hole one is a little bit short. It's kind of awkward, but the rest of them, I mean, it's fine because it's flat enough on most of them behind it. You can just run up off the grass. Yeah. But so if you get a full length 2x4. It's exactly the size we need. So you only have to make two cuts to get the frame going. And it's longer.
Like 3.5 meters or something?
Something like that, yeah.
What tools are you using?
It's actually, they're 12 feet long once they're installed.
What tools are you using, Josh?
We got some Maddox, some spades.
No, I'm talking power tools, impact drivers, what brand?
Oh, we've got, I think it was Makita.
Good lad. Yeah, whose was that? Call them out, whose that was.
Rich Wood.
Well done, Rich. Good brand.
Phil's dad,
yeah.
But yeah, so we got that. Couple of impact drivers for the screws. It's like NASCAR, like Formula One, where like... It's really fun.
I used to do that every day. Think how good... Yeah. Not with wood, but with the tools. I've got every tool. Yeah. I could go and get some if you like.
I love tools. It's kind of why I'm on this show.
He's got that many tools. Hey. Exactly. I was just about to beat me to it. He's got that many tools. He's even turned into one. So what they're doing, they're putting them sand base down in the middle, in front.
So yeah, we essentially pull up the shit pad and then dig out, like, basically, you know, like
a
the canal.
Yeah,
we dig out for the frame. And then we have, like, one little piece of wood that kind of goes in the bottom. Across the frame to kind of hold it in place. And then you dump sand in it to kind of fill it to the top, tamp it down, keep filling until it's level. And then you just wrap the turf over it and screw it down on the sides. And then backfill the dirt on the edges to kind of bury the rest of the turf and keep it in place and all. But it's a fucking lot of work. Like,
yeah, I bet it is. But look how worthwhile it'll be though after. It's going to be class because, like, that the tee pads that I've seen the pictures of look like the absolute perfect tee pads I would want. Like, perfect. Like, I like the AstroTurf over like concrete or anything else. I like just how flat it is. Quite a big platform, even though I don't have a run up. It's class. It looks really good. It feels proper, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah,
it does.
When you step on it, like, yeah, it feels just. Top quality. It makes you throw better, obviously, because you're not even thinking about your feet at all. Like, on the few of them that we played, I was like, a chef's best compliment is a quiet meal. So it was like, I think I took that from Big Germ on one of the practice rounds. But it was so true. Like, I threw and we walked off. It was hole three. And like halfway down the hole, I was like, oh, yeah, that was the new tee pad.
Yeah.
Didn't even think about it because you didn't have to.
Would you prefer if the whole course was that underfoot?
That's interesting, actually.
Like a port, you could move one around.
like an American like football field or like you just could, a turf pitch of any kind, basically.
Yeah, well, you could have the bumps and that if this was possible, but that sort of footing, would you like that?
I mean, yeah, it'd be great.
Should we do it? It's only going to cost £1 billion to turn the whole of Croydon.
I was going to say, this is like indoor disc golf type of stuff. Like, no wind, perfect footing, you know.
That sounds pretty... No putting as well. That's something I come up with after the weekend. I'm thinking about developing a game whereby it's like target practice, effectively. You get points for how close you can get to the pin. And you don't actually... There's no putting involved, so you don't have to put. Because nobody... I've finally figured it out that nobody really likes putting. It's a load of shit. So there's no need for it.
If you hit the basket and it bounces out, that should still count, I think.
I think a lot of people's addiction is hearing the chains, so I don't know what you're talking about. Maybe no, you just every, never every, get to hear
everybody
it.
Everybody likes driving. Fact. Nobody likes putting. Fact.
So no, I love putting.
Get rid of putting and just have like a... bullseye. So you the closer you get to it, the more points you get.
The reason you don't like putting is because you don't like putting.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Because he's not very good.
You need to learn to love it. And when you look at that basket and you're lining up, just smile at it. Like, hey, buddy. Like, it's I'm about to hit you.
Do I have to do the little wink as well?
Yeah. Yeah. It helps.
Cool. So did you get to play around in as well?
Yeah, but don't tell anyone because I stayed out super late and didn't tell Blair. I told her I worked the whole time.
Okay.
Were you there? Yeah. Talk what, about that.
Just a quick... No, before you say that, Bone, what's going to happen when her father-in-law listens? And we have been talking...
Oh, you mean... Yeah, when my dad listens, you mean?
Oh, is your dad, is it?
No, oh, you just it. Said you just said her father-in-law.
Yeah, is it your dad that listens?
No, it's his father-in-law that listens.
That yes,
so Blair's dad.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So you said Blair's father-in-law.
One, we've spoken about her milk, and then two, you've lied to your wife, and now he's going to hear it.
So
we haven't thought this through very well, have we?
What's his name, Josh?
Something happened a couple of weeks ago with his phone, and I think he said he lost his Spotify or something. So today he said, I need you to send me one of those episodes again. I really like that. And I was just thinking, maybe next week.
Josh.
So now maybe 2 weeks.
Don't show him how to go back and listen to previous episodes
no,
as well.
No, no.
What's his name, Josh?
It's John. No, can't do that, can we?
Yeah, just say his first name.
We don't want people looking him up.
No one listens, so they ain't going to look him up.
It's Johnny.
Big Johnny. Big Johnny ain't going to care. He's
Big Slim.
He's a lad's lad, as we say.
Friend of the show.
I like him.
He's a member cool of the Peaky Blinders.
Well, he's, he's a good guy to have a pint with.
Have you played any disc golf, Bone?
Oh, yeah, I had a question for Josh. Were you there, controversial moment, when Sammy's destroyer got stolen?
No, this weekend.
Yeah, it was this weekend. Some
Macbeth destroyer.
Ooh.
Some reprobates on the field picked it up and ran off with it.
Well, there was a lot of people out this weekend because the weather was so nice, so I can see how that would happen. But sad ending to, not really sad, but sad ending to my work day was playing Connor on the blue round.
I see that.
And I hadn't played in a month. And I thought I played all right. I mean, I had a couple bogeys that I shouldn't have had, but we were having a good time. It's all good. But yeah, I had a putt to tie on the last hole that splashed out. It was a little bit high, but it was dead center. And so you have to actually win outright, no playoff for the
tags. That's what we do with the interchange tags.
So I was like, man, this is it. I put it up, and I was like, yep, that's good. And it just didn't stay. So I lost my one tag, but he had the two tags, so it's not really that bad.
No, it's only dropping one. And like you played against Connor quite a bit as well, don't you? So there's always going to be a chance to win that back anyway. It's not like you played somebody that you'd never play normally or whatever.
And joke's on him, I didn't even have the tag with me, so I'm just going to hold on to it.
So you've got two tags?
Yeah, I got one and two now. I'm just going to start collecting all the tags.
See how many you can get away with before you get called out, Josh.
I'm like, oh, that's my bad. I'll bring it next week. Yeah.
Try and play number 3 next week, Josh.
Yeah.
Do you have to log anywhere the matches online?
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if this... Last year we had a QR code you just like could hit and then enter your name and what number it was. So you could literally do it and then put someone else's name and like the worst tag number if you wanted just for jokes. But Rich would get pissed off about it because he'd have to sort it all out at some point. And he'd be like, Josh has 5 tags right now. What the hell?
I imagine it's probably all right when you dick around the first, say, 10 times. But once you've done it 10 times, I can imagine him getting a bit pissed off then.
Yeah, this goes
back to me Google.
We've already told this story.
Yeah, I know, but I like to
and it
bring
wasn't
it up.
Funny when you did it. It yes, wasn't it funny was. When you retold it.
You laughed. I'm sure you would have laughed.
Let's keep it on disc golf because you've already say, told this story. I knew you were going to tell this story.
Before we get to Duff, what did you do this weekend, Bowen?
I went for a bike ride on Saturday with my daughter.
Did you race her? Were you super competitive like you were when you were here with us?
I'm going to sound like a really bad parent, but I just sort of told her off a bit. Because...
For being too slow?
For not really putting any effort in. And for being scared of going down bits that the week before she went down with no issue.
Mm.
So we went along the canal and I said... And it was down by the locks by my brother, which we rode down some locks last weekend, no issues. And I said, if you stop at the top of the locks, I'm going to push you in the canal. No, don't do that. And I went, well, I'm obviously not going to. But don't stop at the top of the locks. Just cycle down them. Because it frustrates me. Because she's a wonderful little girl. Like she is one. She's going to be 11. She's going to be 11 tomorrow on Friday.
Nice.
But, like, she is scared of everything.
Same with Layla.
And
same with Layla.
There's issues. There's not really issues at school. Like, this is getting deep now. But, like, there's some girl who's sort of in the friendship group, but isn't, but is a complete, and I'm sorry to call a child this, arsewipe. And I said to Millie, because Millie gets upset about it, and she's crying and she's upset. And I said, what you have to do? You have to do one of two things. And I don't, and this, a lot of people might have a go at me for this. I said, you get her to the side when no one's listening. You tell her, if you don't fucking leave me alone, I'm going to punch you. Or next time she does something, you just punch her full on in the face. I said, you punch her as hard as you can in the mouth and she will leave you alone for good then.
I'm all about standing up for yourself. But maybe violence isn't the answer.
But, like, she told teachers that, like, and it is tit for tat stuff, like, Millie's a good girl, but I know she's emotional. But, like, I'm just sick of it because, like, this girl's not very nice.
You feel
nice.
Helpless, I'm sure.
Yeah. I think quite a few people's parents probably been through that same situation and feel pretty helpless to not be able to upset their kid and... not able to help or whatever.
Is it going to look good if I go down to school and call out the parents and say I'm going to knock them out? No, it's not, is it?
No.
So it's.
But at the end of the day, it's not the parents, is it, necessarily? I mean, it may be the way that they've been brought up, perhaps, but it's not the parents telling them to do that, is it? It's not nicer.
I'm moving off topic. So she's a little bit scared, so I'm just trying to get into her head to be a bit more confident and she'll enjoy life more. But it's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we had the bike ride. I was in a little bit of a mood with her, but I was all right. I explained to her. She didn't want to listen, but there we go. And then Sunday I worked, so that was pretty much it. What a way to drag out what I did at the weekend.
Wait, man. I've dealt with the same thing. My nephew's been running around these playgrounds and got slapped right in the face by a little girl just like a couple of days ago. And yeah, what can you do?
Yeah.
The parents just like looked over and like grabbed the kid and just like walked off, didn't say anything. I was just like, all right, cool.
Well, at least sort of dealt with it and took them out of the situation.
Yeah.
We went to Legoland on this subject. We went to Legoland and Layla was playing on the play area And we were watching Layla the whole time, but like loads of parents were just like sat down talking or outside the play area on a picnic blanket or whatever, and the kid could have been doing whatever, and they were running havoc, some of them. But Layla was like climbing up like this climbing frame type, like netting, and there was a kid who like, I can't, was just waiting to go, so we was like sort of let her have one more go around climbing up this netting, go down the slide. And this kid, I was talking to Ken, and sort of like had my like side eye on it, on Layla, and this kid sort of threw like bark. I could have sworn he threw bark, but I didn't really properly see him do it. And I was like, well, let's just wait and see if he does it again. He picked up some more. Sure enough, he throws it at her again. And I went, oi, pack that in. And he just went, oh, and like stalked off. And Kay said, Tom, like a parent will say, oh, I don't bloody care. They ain't going to say anything because they weren't even paying attention. Nobody's paying attention to him.
Yeah.
Like if it was my kid throwing bark at another kid for no reason, then I would want to be, I would want my kid to be told off. Like, and yeah. And then we walked out the playground and Layla like held my hand and she goes, thanks, Dad.
Yeah, I mean, that's just character building for that kid. Like, he'll remember that. And he'll be like, oh, yeah, I shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, but anyways, last but not least, I played at the, what was it called? The Berkshire, I think it's the Berkshire Open.
Berkshire, were you about to say?
No, I didn't know if it was a Royal Berkshire.
No, it wasn't. It was just the Berkshire Open.
Right, okay. I mean, Berkshire Open.
We can't do this every week, but you're saying Bark and it's Burke, right?
No, it's Berkshire. It's spelled Berkshire, but you're a Burke to say Berkshire.
It is, come on. I'm pretty certain it is Berkshire or Berkshire. Berkshire.
Oh,
Berkshire Open.
I spoke to an American on the phone literally half an hour ago, and he was reading out my address.
Worcestershire.
And he was like, what? And I went, it's Worcestershire, mate. Oh, thanks, man. I said, don't worry.
In America, there's 20 different ways to say Worcestershire.
But I imagine it's probably the most used county name in all of America, I would have thought, because of the sauce.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it is steak sauce. And people love it. And so everyone knows how to say it their own way.
Worcestershire.
That's how I said it.
So I played in the Berkshire Open at Dinton. And it's the first tournament I've ever played at Dinton. And I played there a few times, like casual rounds and stuff, maybe like three or four times. And so we went there, played an MO3, went down, had a practice round on the Friday. I'm doing this new thing now where I feel like, because last year I was playing like two or three practice rounds on the Friday, and by the Sunday I'm completely burnt out.
Too much.
And it's way too much. So I'm limiting myself to just one practice round. And I don't even like playing like a doubles mess around or anything. I just want to like just play one round and that's it on the Friday. And it seems to be working relatively well. But I played the first round and I was leading. Oh, sorry, I shot an even round on the Friday. And then Saturday morning, first round, I shot an even, which put me one shot in the lead. Nice. And then the second round, I didn't nowhere near as well. Shot like seven over. But quite a lot of people, not as bad as me, but quite a lot of people shot higher for all the divisions on the afternoon. So, and it was really blaringly hot. And so maybe people just a bit exhausted, maybe. I don't
fatigue,
know.
But
like everybody's score seemed to be like two or three shots higher.
Did you manage to take your top off for any of the rounds?
No, I wanted to. I don't know if it's PDGA compliant.
I think CT, you can do whatever you want, can't you?
I don't know. But I think it was seven over, which put me at, I was tied for the lead with three other people. And I forgive myself, but I can't remember who the other two other people were. And then we played the third round and I shot two over par, which put me into tied third, I think it was, going to finals. And I finished fourth. So, it was not too bad, but I lost to...
Big field, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like... I thought Croydon was bigger, but I counted the names. I'm sure the Berkshire Open was a bigger field by about 4 or 5 people. So I was pretty pleased with it. Yeah, the main thing was I missed two putts on the one hole on a different round from exactly the same position. Both times it was literally like fucking 3 or 4 meters out. So it's like 3 or 4 meters. You know, you played Dinton, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know the one after the dog leg right that goes up the bank, and then you throw straight across the field, and the basket's just lower than the hill.
On top of the hill.
So I threw across to there, got to the other side of the field, a little chip up with the zone, and the basket's on a bit of a slope. It rolled down just a little bit, and it was like 3 or 4 meters out. But I was putting back up the hill, and it was like a massive headwind coming over the top of that field. And I was standing there thinking, I ain't going to get this in. I know I'm not going to get it in, putting into a headwind. I know what I've got to do. I know it's going to go high. So aim just a little bit lower. And like both times hit the top band.
What did you use? Bounced down
the berg.
That's a good miss in my book. That's a good miss.
You'd think you wouldn't miss like that with the berg.
And then there was like another 2 holes where I missed putts from like 4 meters away, and it just like gripped it a little bit, and it caught the right hand side of the chains, like just a bit of like it almost like the yips a little bit. I think
you
and
weren't like, putting just with the berg the whole weekend, were you?
Yeah. What? That, but this is what I've been doing though, because I lose confidence in my putting. I started with the Envy, and I lose confidence in myself, and I think, well, the berg ain't gonna go anywhere.
I would say the berg could be the worst option, because that thumb trap, man, it's going to get caught and then you're going to yank it right.
Yeah, maybe that's right. Maybe it is. Maybe that does do something like that. But I can't remember the hole numbers, like 15. I think it's 15 where you throw and there's like a little like ditch on the left-hand side, and there's a tree, which is a mando that plays to the left of it. And it makes it look a bit narrower, and the basket's just beyond the tree. Do you know what I mean?
I'm
pretty sure it's 15. Well, I threw, so it was level with the Mando almost. So I like just came short of the Mando with the Destroyer.
Pretty
nice shot. Had a circle's
edge
point.
Forehand?
Nah, backhand.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, I'm going to get aggressive. I thought, I'm going to take out a disc that'll glide a bit better. So I thought, I don't think I'm going to go into the ditch. So through the Luna, it hit the band, bounced down onto its side and rolled into the OB. And then, so I had a meter in and it was like 5 meter put, and I missed that. So I went from what could have been 2 to 5. Yeah. And I was pissed off at that point. So I had
we call that a bird double. Yeah, bird double.
Yeah.
Is it a bogle for the
Badogie.
So I played really well. I felt like I played really well. I shot like a 9.30 rated round on the morning on
That's
the first
really
morning
good.
And like my event average was like 900, which is like 25 or so above my average.
And that's only 23 behind Josh.
Is it right? Is that right? There you go. Yeah, I've that. But I played really well. I just disappointed in my putting. But having said that, I played. We had Wardy, who's one of the Interchange team members, and he played really well all weekend. And he just doesn't miss putts. Basically, he doesn't miss approach shots. Always puts himself in range with any approach shot, and always makes a putt with inside circle. He puts all the time, and it's like he just can't claw it back. The only way you can claw it back is like a really, really good drive that gets you in a good position. But having said that, like, we had a really good time, and I'm really pleased that Wardy won. I was saying to you before, and like, I don't feel that bad about being in the lead and not winning, because because Wardy won. Where if somebody else would have won, I'd have been a bit more like, oh.
Wasn't Wardy
kind of fucked that up, Tom?
Wasn't he kind of at the beginning of the season saying like, oh, I'd never get to play. Like, I feel like I'm not playing as good as I can, or like, I feel like he had some like struggle early on, but now he's kind of smashing it.
Yeah, he plays quite a lot at Amesbury, which is like almost like a pitch and put in the disc golf world.
Oh, that's rude.
Well, it is, isn't it? It is. Yeah. There's a lot of holes which you a good like any of the pros on the pro tour would like. There's numerous holes where it's almost like a jump put for them, really.
Well, if you think about it, though, that makes your approach and putting game a lot better.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But initially, he struggled with distance because he's not playing courses that it requires distance, whereas his approach game and his putting was always really good. And that comes from playing a shorter course. And now, this year, he's improved his distance by quite a bit. And this is where he's getting the win. So he's won at Welsh Open and he's won the Berkshire Open.
That's awesome.
Call it the Berkshire Open?
Yeah,
just you did that with that. You did that without realizing.
Yeah, dog.
But we had a good, really, really good weekend. Played with a few good people, notably Adam Keane. It's the first time I've ever played with Adam Keane.
Nice
bloke. Yeah, it's class. Yeah, yeah, really good.
He's a bagger. He's such a bagger. Look,
yeah.
Adam, if you're listening, you've completed your amateur status. You've been invited to the Worlds. Stop bagging.
But
can he go to Am Worlds if he goes to Pro Masters?
Yeah, because he can just turn down cash if he wins.
Got you. We had a good time. We played with loads of good people and met with loads of people again. And it's always good when you go to the two-day events and you stop over and you go out for meals. That's my favourite part of the whole tournament, really, I think, is going out and like seeing people and having a chat, going for drinks and going for food and whatever. It's just really good.
Thanks for rubbing it in.
But you're coming to Essex in beginning of August. So
what date's that?
6th, 7th, something like that.
Perfect, that's all right.
I'm going to miss that one.
You're doing the week after or not? The English Open. Or are you missing that one as well?
Well, I don't have any plans to do it at the moment. And that's right when not the last bit of family that's coming, but I have a short break in August.
How much family have you got, Josh?
Well, they just keep coming. Impose Blair's family here for a month.
It's a free holiday to London, isn't it? That's what it is.
Yeah, and they have a major excuse this time, so you can't turn them down.
Where have you been today?
What did I do today? I went to some parks with the nephew this morning while the ladies went to like a little baby thing. And then we went to Battersea Park to the zoo. And just kind of walked around Battersea Park afterwards and to a little cafe on the water. And it was nice.
You were definitely somewhere because you did your sneaking away trick, didn't you?
Shh.
Grassing him up again.
Oh, no.
Nah, it's fine.
Big Johnny's all right about that. He gets it.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on to the news. So we'll go to Upper Park.
Since 2011, Upper Park Disc Golf has focused on disc golf bags and accessories with unique styles, innovative designs, and unmatched comfort. They use cutting-edge design techniques and durable outdoor materials with a lifetime guarantee, so you can focus on what really matters, keeping it in the chains. Whether you're a Bowen or a seasoned pro, Upper Park has the bag to fit your needs. Go to upperparkdiscgolf.com today and save 10% with our code INTHECHAINS10. Now back to the show.
Perfect. Over to Bowen.
Bowen's fake news.
I'd like to start off the news with a public service announcement and an apology to our only Scottish listener. Pete pulled up that I missed a tournament last week. And he said, is it because you Southerners don't care about us up north?
Oh, no. This is a big issue.
He was only joking, but I thought I would mention the Perth Shear Open, which was last week on the 5th of June in... Don't ask me to say this because it's Scottish, but...
We are asking you to say it.
Killin, I'm going to say. And it was the Perth Shear Open. So I'll just run through because I've got a lot to go through. Winners of each division.
Wait. What course was it?
I don't know. It just says Killin.
I think it's...
Killin.
Was that Lochte?
Guessing so.
Guessing so. I've heard it is. So
I've heard it's one of the... I've heard it's one of the more beautiful courses in the UK.
If it is, it is.
Speedrun it, Bowen.
Chris Smith, Cameron Agnew, Tiffany Strand-Bygaard, Graham McGill, Paul Malloy, Alec Andoyan, and Laura Fife, Ewan Penman. There we go.
Did you say Paul McGroin?
I said Alec Andoyan.
No, you said...
Paul Malloy.
Paul McGroin.
Paul Malloy.
What?
Paul Malloy.
Oh, okay.
Phil McCracken.
I thought you said Paul McGroin.
I'd keep Greenley.
Ben Dover.
There we go. We got out of the way.
I'm not that childish.
Go on then. What else we got?
Right. Shall we do the Berkshire Open that was this weekend?
Yes.
So... In first place in advanced is another, I'm going to call him out. I haven't spoken to him properly, but I think he's turning into a bit of a bagger as well.
Yeah, you can't name and shame in MA1.
Liam Pitt.
No, you can't.
I bigged him up.
You can play in MA1 as long as you want.
I bigged him up the other week because he's doing so well and winning all these tournaments. And he absolutely wiped the floor with everyone else in MA1.
Yeah.
It might be time to move up.
Was it like 14 strokes or something?
Eight strokes.
Oh. Still.
He's getting...
I mean, sometimes you have a great week and no one else does.
What, four tournaments in a row?
Yeah. All right, we're going to... It's official. Bagger.
Duffy spent time with him. And I know he's a nice lad. I haven't had loads to do with him.
But... Less said about the time spent together, the better. He's a lovely lad. And it's nothing to do with his company. It was just the game that was created outside of the Travel Lodge. Probably is not best for public ears.
hide the party sausage.
No, not quite that. Go on, move along.
In advanced women was Melody Zinder. I'm hoping Zander. Now, I don't know if she's an actual Brummie, but I know she lives in Birmingham. So I'm going to say,
nice.
If you're not, you're an honorary member of Hoodoff.
The fucking Pooky Blinders. God.
Sorry.
You like that, do you?
It's just ironic because the people who do it are generally...
I know.
Absolute morons.
I know.
Middle-aged men who...
Come on. We've lost him. We've lost him, bless him. Come on.
Amateur Masters 40 and over was won by Sandbagger that we've already talked about. But again... A wonderful human being. Like, he is a great bloke, and that is Mr. Adam Key.
Yeah, and
he won by 18 shots, Josh.
That's who I was thinking about.
In Amateur Masters 50 and over, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but does it sound good?
Yeah.
Can I just say, Adam Keane's worst round, I think, was by far the round that he spent with me. I don't know whether that... I'm sure that's right. But I don't know whether that's... I had any impact on that. But if that was me, I do apologise.
There they say, lay down with dogs.
Or, what is it? If you stand in shit, you end up turning into shit. What's the saying like that?
Yeah.
If you roll in shit, I don't know.
It's something like that. If you've been, if you're around it long enough, you end up turning into it.
that must be the saying.
You are what you eat.
Well, that famous saying. If you spend enough time with shit, you turn into shit.
It works. Josh is gone now.
It doesn't work.
Why doesn't it work?
That, you know, you've heard that famous saying before, haven't you, Josh? Or is it just a British thing?
Yeah.
If you spend enough time with shit, you actually turn into shit.
It fucking works. Well done to Dennis for coming.
Sorry. I was going to say, let's make a t-shirt.
Well done to Dennis for coming in fifth in the division. Played really well. In Amateur Masters 50, that was in 40, by the way. Josh maybe lose my place, so I'm blaming him, but he can edit it all to
sound
good. Come
on, stop bloody rambling. Get over it. We're on with it.
Am 50 was won by Urko Usho. Is that how we say it? Is that, or Alto? Have we got any confirmation?
I don't know. Show, I would have thought.
But super cool dude. Runs the club out there.
He played, it looked like he played in jeans. I mean, it was red art, but he was like kind of like playing in like jeany type, chino-y type thing. But he had like a polo shirt on with his collar up, but like, you know, like Cantona used to.
Where was he going afterwards?
I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
Is he a casual?
He looked pretty smart.
Who's like his
Terrace Ultra. Yeah,
who's his firm, yeah?
Reading.
The Reading Boys. Reading Ultra. The Reading Boys. Ashley Long won MA2 with Cam Woodhouse in joint second. So, well done to them. Matt Lee did himself really proud for his first event.
Wait, you only named one of the joint seconds?
The other one was Jack Smith.
Okay.
Sorry.
I don't know. It just seemed kind of sad.
I've got nothing against Jack Smith.
They're both Croydon boys, so, you know, I just wanted to give them equal amount of shout out.
Both play really well. Yeah. Jack played pretty solidly all weekend from like what I was seeing. I felt like he played like he was pretty comfortable with his game. Cam smashed it the first first day, dropped away a bit on the third round to like, I think he was like fifth after the third round, and then pulled it back in the finals and start, which for his age, I think shows quite a bit of maturity in my opinion, because I kind of said this to him after. I said, like, you drop back to fifth, you could easily have just gone, I'll fuck this up.
Yeah.
But no, he turned it around, started playing better golf again and got himself back up to a better position and finished the tournament pretty well. So I think that shows quite a good bit of maturity, really. But
yeah, well done.
Yeah, so well done to Cam, well done to Jack. Matt Lee did really well for his first tournament in MA2, coming in tied sixth with... what's his name? Schmob Schmickle. So well done to him as well. Like the people who were in MA3 last year seem to be finding their feet in MA2. So that's always good to see.
Yeah.
We then had going the wrong way here. In FA2, we had Mariana LaRocque winning with Ellen Daly and Terry Pospisilova in second and third. And then in recreational, we had the one and only Wardy winning with Oliver Burke in second, Andrew Herdon in third, and the one and only mega dickhead, Tom Duffield, in fourth.
he could have played a lot better, I think.
Yeah, I think he could have. I really think he could have, especially seeing as he had a shit-up round in the first round. Like, I feel like he let the side down, Duff.
You know what they say? They say, you've shot a good round, and then you end up lead card second round, and kind of if you bottle it, a guy, I did this once, and a guy said to me, he goes, oh yeah, air's really thin up there, isn't it? And I was just like, shut up.
I always think it's like that saying, Josh, if you drink from a bottle, you're probably going to bottle it. You've heard that saying before.
You're a fucking asshole.
If you drink from a glass, you'll probably turn into one.
Yeah, exactly.
And then shatter.
Is that famous saying?
I've actually got a question for you. Now,
it's not about a saying, is it?
No. So, Wardy and you have been mixing it up near the top in MA3.
Yeah.
I know Wardy plans to. Do you plan to move up to MA2 anytime soon?
No.
Because there doesn't seem to be that big a difference, golf, in quality.
I feel like you should get a win at least.
Yes, that's what I said. I've said, if I get a win, I'll move up. Or if I go above 900, I'll move up. And I feel like that's pretty fair. Once I've won one, I will go up. If I win one. If I don't win one and I get above 900, then I'll just go up, obviously, anyway. But I feel like that's pretty fair. I feel like I should at least have the chance of winning one before going up.
Yeah.
But it ain't going to happen, so I'll be MA3 for life. Anyways.
That was it, because the BDGA screwed us out of MA4 this year, so...
Oh, bloody hell. Have we got any more results on the weekend?
Yes, we have Beaver State, which I didn't know was a state in America, to be honest.
The Beaver State Fling. I love the name of that one.
Yeah. So, MPO was won by Garrett Gerthy, with Joel Freeman in second and Corey Ellis in third. Now, I saw Joel Freeman's ace was pretty good. Yep. Did you see that skip ace?
Yeah,
that
skip
was
ace,
nice.
Yeah.
And I loved his T-shirt as well.
Yeah, strawberry. He always wears that strawberry T-shirt.
And
he always wears some funky clothes, actually. I quite like Joel Freeman. I think he'd be quite a nice
and
chap.
And he throws a gator as well.
Yeah.
He got some flack a few tournaments ago because he said, I think it might have been DDO, that second course they played that was just like terrible. Was it DDO? Yeah.
No. The first course at Portland.
No. This was like way back in the beginning of the season. Anyway, he just was complaining about not playing good and blamed it on the course design, which everyone plays the same course. So it's like, how can you blame that? Anyway, doesn't matter. He does seem like a nice guy, and he's been playing really good the last few tournaments.
Yes. Yeah.
And double GS.
Yeah, double
GS. And
GS.
Double G. I'm happy to see him win. Dude, the least likely putt to win anything, but it just keeps finding the chains.
Yeah, he couldn't miss a Portland with it.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I haven't seen any of the Beaver State Fling because obviously been playing all weekend. No.
So I've seen more of the Beaver State Fling this week than you have. Because I saw them all park it in the woods as well. Have you seen that one, Josh?
Oh, the short hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be...
I'm not talking about the quality of the film, quality of the course.
That's exactly what you're trying to do.
What I'm saying is, I have watched more coverage this weekend than you have, Duff.
Yeah,
I haven't even seen all of it. I was kind of trying to catch up, but then I realized the final round isn't even up yet. Maybe it's on the DGN, but I didn't have 4 hours. I only had 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'll go back and watch it. But yeah, it looked cool. Did y'all see Corey Ellis's putt go through the bottom of the basket?
I was going to mention this after the news, but we'll mention it now.
Why? So he actually...
I read that they welded... The basket had broken. They re-welded the bit on.
And a tree slightly knocked it down or something.
Yeah, it was like slightly misaligned where they'd welded it so that it was just big enough for the disc to fall through. But I mean, it's shit, isn't it?
How can that count as an extra shot?
I see like Drew Gibson say that surely it's time now. And like he was saying, like, I've been banging on about it for years. Surely it's time now for having a standardized pro basket. And like, surely that's got to be the case. You can't have, like, I know sponsors want their own baskets at their own events. Yes, I get that. But surely you've got to have a standardized basket across the board. It's got to be.
Yeah, because if you just carry,
you've got to have the same basket at every tournament.
Yeah, you could just carry the exact same baskets around the tour and just put them in the collars in the ground at whatever course you're at.
And because, like, when we was at Bluebells, there's one hole, the hole that is just before the water carry hole. It's in the woods. And there's like there's a short basket and a long basket. I don't know if you remember that, Josh. But the long basket is a Prodigy basket. The short basket is a Latitude basket. Now, I'm not even joking. The Latitude basket, I reckon it's like, it's probably like another half, 3/4 of a foot wider.
Dude, they're huge. That's what Horsenden has.
Yeah. You'd have to I don't even think I'd be able to wrap my arms around it. It's that wide at the top.
Yeah.
Whereas the Prodigy basket looked like one of those bloody pinpoint training baskets compared to it.
Yeah.
How can that be right? That they're both sanctioned for, like, but and they both can be played at pro events. It's just
equally,
not right.
Equally, you've got baseline plastic putters and premium putters, and that doesn't make a difference. So surely the basket doesn't make a difference.
It does when you've got one that's a meter wider.
Yeah,
seems stupid to me that there's not a standardized one.
I'm definitely on the side of standardized baskets.
Who'd you give it to then?
Nobody. Just the Disc Golf Pro Tour hasn't made to their spec.
What about us mere mortals?
Well, it's all right for us to use different baskets. It doesn't really, but on the elite, like,
that's
the European
what I'm saying.
Pro
just,
Tour should
just
be the same.
Just the Pro Tours of, you know, European Pro Tour and the American Pro Tour, like,
yeah, all the PDGA haven't made.
BDGA Pro Tour doesn't matter.
But, like, I just don't understand why you wouldn't have, on the top tour, just have the same basket across the board. It seems like the most obvious thing. So, nobody's worrying. Because, like, you often see people saying, oh, I'm not comfortable with these baskets and stuff at different tournaments when you swap to, I don't know, a different basket. And you're like, but everybody's playing off the same basket then every time.
I don't understand that because I feel like who's changing their putt to the basket that, like, no one's doing that. You're trying to hit the center of it every time.
Exactly. So, it doesn't matter what basket you use.
I mean, some people know, like, you know, this catches, you know, this type of putt better, or, like, maybe the weak side's better on this basket. But it's like, you're always trying to hit the center pole. Like, it seems weird to me. But, having the same basket every week for Pro Tour events would be cool.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It makes it more interesting. So all they need to do
it doesn't when it fucking falls through the bottom of the basket.
They just need
stupid.
Well, that is
imagine that on that LIV tour, the PGA tour, the European tour in golf, where there's something like that happens and the ball just goes, oh yeah, it doesn't count. Sorry guys, it's fault with the equipment.
The ball just goes all the way into like Middle Earth.
We forgot to put the flag in, but there's no hole in the ground.
So no one can finish that hole. Yeah, sorry, Duffy. You all got 1,000.
That isn't a normal basket that does that. That is a malfunction basket. That in reality, the organisers should have sorted the fuck out.
Maybe they didn't know until it actually fell through that it was a problem. But at that point, the TD should just say that counts.
Yeah, exactly. There should be a rule to allow it to count because it had clearly stopped in the basket. When does a putt count? Does a putt count only when
it has to
when
come
you
to pick? Rest?
Yeah, well, that came to rest, didn't it?
Not really.
No. It did not.
Did it slide straight through?
As it come down, it sort of went onto an angle, didn't it? And then fit through the gap almost diagonally. Like, the bloke you wouldn't be able to do it again if you tried, I don't think, the way it sort of fell through the basket. But
no, it's one in a million.
Besides the point, but I don't know. I just think, yes, it may not have prevented it, but if the Disc Golf Pro Tour are literally putting the baskets in for the tournament, taking them back out, nobody's vandalising them, they're not going to be damaged at all, really, I wouldn't have thought. Okay. And I mean, you could just use the same basket over
the guys
and over
responsible
again.
For putting them in should have like a little checklist of like, okay. You know.
Okay, let's talk about where are you storing the actual baskets for the course?
Well, they just travel with the travel people.
They have so many things to travel with. They just add it to the list.
I'm talking about the ones for the course. Where are you storing ones for the course? How are you going to set that? Who's in charge of taking the old baskets out and setting
them? You can put them literally anywhere, anyone's backyard.
Who sets up like that Zooka thing that they drive off between and like the hand? Right. Like sometimes it's hand eye supply.
Right,
like, that's a massive scaffolding structure thing.
Right, okay.
Just add a position to the tour for basket boys.
You're digging holes all around the course, putting.
You know, no, you're not. You have a sleeve already in the ground.
It's already got the metal sleeve already in the ground. So literally, take the one basket out, put the other basket in.
Have they? Because I know all the ones around here haven't. They're just bloody concreted straight in the ground.
Yeah, there's like a sleeve, and then it pops out, and then you could take the top of that off.
Now what about when they have the elevator basket with big box things? They have to change that anyway.
They just roll that in. That's no damage. But here's my question, Josh. And Duffy, if you're going to standardise baskets, should there be a standard height for a basket then?
No.
Why?
No,
I don't think so.
What do you mean? But what do you mean by height? Do you mean from the ground to the top of the basket?
Yes.
Or do you mean from the rim of the basket?
From the ground
of the basket.
From the ground to the top of the basket.
No.
Why?
No.
Well, you wanted to standardise the other thing.
The elevated basket makes holes harder and more interesting.
But yeah. So having different baskets.
Not ones that fall through that don't catch
it. Right. Before you start with this bullshit, that was one malfunctioned basket that someone fucked up
one
the
too
fix
many,
for.
One too many at the elite level of sport.
They fucked
in my
up the fix. It's nothing to do with different baskets. So you want to standardise the basket, so why not let's standardise height of the basket off the floor? What's the difference?
What about there a basket that if it's the bottom bar is off by a millimeter, it doesn't fall through? Maybe like a couple more reinforcement bars and like.
Why not just have a flat bottom?
Flat bottom baskets make the disc golf wheel go round
with some holes in, with some drilled holes in there to let water out. Why not just do that?
I don't know. It just sucks, and
I just think it makes the elite level of the sport look shit and incompetent when stuff like that happens.
Why do we actually throw frisbees at the baskets? Why don't we throw pieces of fruit?
But hang on then. Okay, we'll take it one step further. Go back to what I said at the start of the show. Don't have a basket. Just have a flag in the ground. Nobody likes putting. Throw it to the back, throw to the target, no putting involved.
Let's just not play disc golf.
Let's not. Let's just go to the pub and get smashed.
This conversation's done.
Right. What else? Is that the last of the news?
No, because we haven't done FPO yet. So FPO was won by, I want to go back onto MPO for a minute. I know you're saying you're happy to see Garrett Gurthy win, Joel Freeman, bloody bloody blah. Is that because there are some big players missing at the moment?
Yes, of course. Simon went back home and gave everyone else a chance.
Ricky's
if he was
not
there,
there.
He would have won.
And Eagle's not playing nowhere near to his potential since he injured himself. But you can't take that out. There's nothing to say that those two would or anybody else, Ricky, would have beaten him.
No, nope.
You've got to beat what's in front of you, but and that's what they've done. I just think it's wrong to take anything away from him personally.
But Josh takes it away from himself when he wins a tournament and he doesn't feel like it was the strongest field, don't you? Is it a hollow victory for him?
It's a much higher percentage when players miss here because there's not as many good players. And it's like, on the Pro Tour, those guys are all have the capability of winning a tournament. Just about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You could literally say, not everybody's got a chance of winning, but I would say you could make a case for like 20 people on the tour to put three or four good rounds together and win a tournament.
Yeah, and Garrett's been right there. So it's not like, yeah. I mean, he literally could have won.
Yeah.
What was it? What?
Portland.
Yeah, sorry, Portland. And, but yeah, so I think it's well deserved for sure. Yeah.
Okay. FPO, she's been winning. Is this second or third tournament in a row?
It's the second in a row, but it's the third tournament this year.
Valerie Manduhano.
Yeah.
She's look at Josh's face. He thought I was going to say it wrong, didn't you?
Well, you still did.
I said it as close to as it's going to get.
All right, say it again.
Manduhano.
Man. That's the only difference.
Manduhano.
Not man, it's Mon. Manduhano.
Worcestershire.
But yeah, no, she smashes. Yeah.
And there was a four shot difference, which I think's like at the end on the third round, if you've got a four shot lead, although there's still a chance people can claw it back, you're pretty confident with that you're gonna hold on, aren't you?
I don't know. To me, four strokes isn't enough to just be like, yeah, I got this.
No.
Because I feel like Simon had three or four stroke lead in Portland.
Because, I mean, you say that, Bo, and you say four shots. It's literally a two-hole swing. If somebody birdies those two holes and you bogey them, which is not out of the realms of possibility.
Not for the pros, though. For us,
well,
yes.
It's not enough to go into safe mode and be like, okay, well, I'm just not going to try for birdie here. I'm going to go lay up for a par. You can't really do that, I don't think, yet.
You can with the last four holes coming up.
Well, yeah. I mean, if the math works out, obviously. Yeah. But, yeah. But starting the round, you're not going to be like, okay, I'm changing my game. You know, you're probably going to play the same game that got you the four-stroke lead.
I agree.
Yeah, okay. So, she won with Kat Allen in second and Owen Scoggins in one of our favourites, Owen in third. And then a great performance from fellow team member, VVD.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
She came in eighth, like, and we knew this was going to happen, that her results were going to get better and better. She had a pretty, what's the word, unfortunate couple of seasons, and she's coming back into form now. She's getting confidence. She's one to watch.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's just nice to see sort of all the hard work pay off. Like, because, I mean, we speak to her quite a lot. And we know how much work she puts in through the off season and stuff like that. And when results weren't necessarily going the way she would have wanted, or was coming out as good as she would have wanted, you kind of feel like it's disheartening and things like that.
She knows how good she is, doesn't she?
Yeah, exactly. You're not getting the results that you feel that you're deserving of for all the work that you put in. And it's just nice to see that. It's starting to pay off a little bit now. So hopefully this is just a start of it and there's more to come. But
This is a springboard.
Yeah, really pleased for her.
And as we said last week, she's into the championships, isn't she? So
Yeah.
It's all good. So yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for me. Let me guess now. We don't have time to do the planned topic that you had planned.
Probably not.
What was the topic?
We're like pre-edit. We're running it like an hour and 10.
But you still have... There's enough time to tell us what the topic would have been. Give a teaser for next week. What was it?
But I don't want other podcasts stealing ideas.
Are they even recording anymore?
I don't know.
I can't remember the last time they put out a show.
I weren't talking about one specific podcast anyway. I was talking generically.
I was talking about both the other ones in the UK, to be honest.
So the we'll round out there, I think. So we have got some pretty good stuff coming in. I think. Yeah, we're sort of around the day the podcast comes out on Thursday, we'll probably have some stuff dropping. So keep an eye on In the Chains. I know I say it all the time, but make sure you remember of it because you miss out on some real class discs.
Any clues?
No, we'll leave it to surprise. So you want to join In The Chain Shop group on Facebook, and then our website is www.inthechainshop.com. We ship worldwide, and we have special edition stock and bags. So, yeah, we've got decent supply and some stuff that you can't necessarily get in other places. So, come over and check us out.
And as Duffy says, we are the cheapest in the UK.
Cheapest worldwide, wide.
How many people did
Prestige
you tell?
Worldwide.
How many people at the weekend did you tell we were the cheapest?
Nobody. Everybody knows. Everybody knows we're the cheapest brand.
Fair enough.
Why can't you say you have the greatest value? Because cheap, that just sounds bad.
No, but
I know, but Duffy thinks, because he's a tight ass, that cheap is good. Duffy would happily go and pay a fiver for a shit meal in a pub than pay 20 quid for an exquisite meal in a restaurant.
You don't know me at all. You don't. Not when it comes to food. Not when it comes to food. I will not skimp on food.
Something to add to that. A friend of mine just took his wife for their anniversary to a Spoon's because it was cheap.
See, I would not do that. Pure,
you should
not,
never do that.
Would is it someone we'd know?
Yep.
Unbelievable.
We'll not be naming and shaming because
can we do the rhyming
just,
thing?
Let's just hope that they know who they are and that they are listening. They should be ashamed of themselves.
Schmuard.
No, definitely not. He's a foodie.
Oh, of course he is. His burrito guy.
I'm a foodie. I wouldn't take Kay somewhere cheap for an anniversary. One, because she'd be paying half anyway, because it's our anniversary. But two, I would like it to be nice food, because I'd want to eat it. So.
Who said, and Josh, who said chivalry was dead, eh?
It's not. It's a street in London, actually.
It's like that saying, if you like nice food, just make sure that you take your missus to a nice restaurant where they serve nice food, because you'll be eating it as well.
If you eat nice food, you will turn into it.
Yes. If you spend enough time eating nice food, you should be able to learn the ability to cook nice food. That's another saying that they say over in Britain.
Classic. That's a classic.
There's definitely something about hanging around shit for too long.
you find what it is for next week.
Best value right. In the UK.
Best value, and that'll do. Right, remember to keep it in the chains.
KWITC.
Keep it in the chains.
Thanks for listening to In the Chains. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And if you like the show, please leave us a review. Make sure to check out our YouTube channel to view our round videos and course flythroughs. And hit subscribe there too. Until next time, keep it in the chains.